quick outline of what's in Parshas Truma, right, we start off with Moshe making the greatest campaign ever, money campaign, because he got more than he needed, right? Can you, if everybody always says, imagine collecting, and you got to say, don't bring any more money. You know what? We've got all the money we ever need. We're told about the raw materials needed for the Mishkan. Kol Yisroel brought gold, silver, copper, wool, dyed sky blue, wool, red, dark red, crimson. There was linen, goat's wool, ram skins, acacia wood, oil, spices, incense, and we know that the Nisim brought the amazingly precious stones for the Chayshim. Then we're told how the Arayin HaKadosh was made, Moshe's Arayin. In Sheni, we're told about the gold cover on top of the Arayin and the Keruvim, these baby angelic type of figures put on top. We're told that the weight of the cover alone, without the Keruvim, was somewhere, look at this range, 150 to 2,500 pounds, depending on which Rafarish you look at. We're then told about the Shulchan that had the showbreads on it. In Shlishi and Revi, we're told about the menorah and its utensils, and we're told that it was 1 talent, 3,000 shekels, or 150 pounds of pure gold. We're told about the basic structure of how the Mishkan was constructed, where there were beams, where there were decorative material, where there were leather covering, where there was, or tachash. The tachash was an animal that specifically at that time. Hamishi gives us the detail of the parochas. The parochas was the dividing partition, curtain-like, which separated the Kodshei Kodshim, the Holy of Holies, from the rest of the Oyel Moed, wherein was the Mizbeach HaZohav, the Shulchan, the Menorah, etc. In Shishi and Shvi, we learn about the Mizbeach HaChitzon, the copper outdoor Mizbeach, which Korbanot were brought on, and then it had a ramp, and then it deals with the outer, which surrounded the entire Mishkan, which presumably meant that's where the Ezras Noshim, the Ezras Kohanim, the Ezras Kohanim were. But there's a tremendous amount of architectural detail given in Truma. We know, we've been taught, that the Mishkan was to be a constant reminder of Har Sinai, of what happened, of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did and does communicate with Klal Yisroel. Friend, in an essay he wrote of 2023, says, the pasuk says, right, make for me a sanctuary, utterly mikdash, the shachanti b'saicham, and I am going to dwell in the midst of Kol Yisroel. Rashi says, you should make for my name a house of Kedusha, of holiness. And like Fran says, Rashi is saying this house of holiness is the essence of the Mikdash, because that's where everyone could feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence at any moment, at every moment. He says that in 2021, a Rabbi Yossi Goldstein sent me an email telling me the following. Rabbi Yosef Buxbaum was the founder of Machon Yerushalayim, which is, he says, an institution in Yerushalayim which writes amazing Svara. And was once walking Yerushalayim, and he found, he passed the house of the Chabina Rav. Of the Chabina Rav, he says, was someone called Harav Dov Beresh Weidenfeld. His years were 1881 to 65. And my friend says, the term world-class scholar and great personality don't come close to describing what this individual was. But Frank says that around 1960, before his bar mitzvah, the Rav in his shul was of Sholem Rivkin. And he said that the Jabina Rav was clearly the Gadol Hador, the greatest person in the generation. And a friend says, if Aaron Cutler was alive then, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Eliezer Silver, Rav Hutner, and then Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin was considered the Rosh Yeshiva's Rosh Yeshiva. I know Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov considered him their leader. Nevertheless, he says, Rabbi Rivkin, told Rabbi Franz that the Tzidkina Rav was, without any question, the greatest gadol. He said, at that stage, I was young. I didn't understand fully. He says, I heard this name, Gadol Hador. I learned that the individual was a Rosh Yeshiva. He was a Pesach, he was a Tzaddik. And he says, today I could go on and on and on and tell you about the godless, the greatness of the Tribune Rav. He says, Rav Buxbaum was once walking past the Tribune Rav's house. He says, which was at Rehov Ibn Shaprut, number 12 in Shaarei Chesed, near Yerushalayim. And he saw that Rav Aryeh Levin, known as the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim, was standing and crying in front of the Chabina Rav's home. Rav Buxbaum walked over to Rav Aryeh Levin and he said, why are you crying? Are you in pain? And why right here in front of the Chabina Rav's home? Aryeh told him one of his children was sick. And he said, I could go to the Kosel Marav. Oh, if I could go. This was pre-67, apparently. If I could go there, I would go there and pour out my tears. If I need to go to the Kosel and I'm unable to do so, I go to another place which has the essence of Kedusha, the house of the Gadol Hador. Rabbi, right? This is, he says, right? He said that this is a Mokon Kodesh. This is the holiest place. The Shebiner's home is a Mokon Kodesh. It's on the level of, you know, something we can't imagine. He says, what Rashi says, also Mikdash, make me a sanctuary. He says, one thinks of all the Torah that the Chindina Rav's house contains, all the chesed, all of the tzidkis there. There's no question that it had to be, you know, probably the highest holy place next to the Beis Hamikdash. Well, Buxbaum was impressed with what Aryeh was saying to him, and he went and he told the Meister for Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who we know was a Gadol Hador as well. And was also living in Sharei Chesed. Listen to what Rav Auerbach said. Definitely, what he did was 100% appropriate. Whenever I pass that holy place, I lift my eyes heavenward in prayer. Shlomo Zalman, right, said when he was in proximity to this Makom Kodesh, that's where he beseeched HaKadosh Baruch Hu in davening. He said, what rational human being doesn't say a tefillah when he goes to the Kaisel? He said, people who are religiously sensitive know what a holy place is, and that it's, so to speak, a conduit to Shemayim. He said, what Rashi was giving us was comment on what make me a mikdash, a house of holiness. What Rashi was saying is, yes, you may have a fixed place of holiness, the Mishkan, the Beis Hamikdash, right? Where you will feel Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there are other places that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has established in the world with equal degrees of holiness. It's a matter of having, as they say, the right spiritual tentacles to appreciate it, because we accomplish as much. And that was, I guess, the idea that the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash were so far above our comprehension, no matter what we comprehend it to be, it's a lamayla, lamayla. My friend goes on and he writes, the Torah says, we build an aron, atzei shikim, shikim wood, 2.5 amos in length, 1.5 in width, and 1.5 in height. You cover it with pure gold inside and outside, and it's overlaid. Over the years, he's taught and he's written that the Kalim and the Mishkan all had tremendous symbolism. The Orion, in which we put the Luchos, we're told both the first and the Shivrei Luchos, the ones that were broken, is symbolic, he says, of a Talmud Chacham. The same way the Torah, the Luchos, live in an Orion, the Torah lives within the Talmud Chacham. The fact that the Torah says that an aureole must be covered in and out with gold, right? Have no seam that's not gold, right, when you attach it, is symbolic of the concept Toichai Hibaro. An individual has got to be the same inside. Is not in any way, he says, a faker. He needs to be a sterling character, and the same pureness that's in the Chumash and the Talmud has got to be reflected in how he lives. There is very much written, going back to the Gemara, whether someone may or may not teach the Talmud who he thinks is not Tocho Kabbalah. If you've got a Talmud who you're somewhat skeptical, I guess, about his everyday activities, he said, "An Avishur of Nasan, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel Argi." Beis Shammai was very restrictive, that they would only take the best of the best into their yeshivas. Beis Hillel was less discriminating. Beis Hillel had an open enrollment policy. He wanted to come, we'll work with you. We know, the Gemara tells us in Brachos, that Rav Gamliel, when he was the head of the yeshiva, had a policy like Beis Shammai, and again, restricted entry to the yeshiva. When the leadership changed, Abelazar ben Azariah became the Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, open the door of the Beis Medrash, and they admitted 400 people who had never been allowed in before to accommodate those who wanted to now come in. And all of a sudden, we're told, there was a tremendous spirit of Chiddush, brand new ideas emanated, things that the original Beis Medrash hadn't seen. When Rav Gamliel watched what happened, he became demoralized. And he had, they say, a great pachad, a great fear, that his policy had inhibited the grandeur of Torah amongst Klal Yisrael. The moment that he was shown containers full of embers, which meant that these new students were like ashes, somehow telling him that yes, they came in, and there was an influx of learning, but they were not of the same caliber of the original people. The Gemara says that Shemayim was being nice to him. Shemayim let him see this, so he wouldn't be totally demoralized. But the policy of Elazar ben Azariah was correct. He said, someone told him a pshat in this Gemara in the name of Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, He said the following. What is the interpretation? Whether Eliezer ben Azarias right, not right? Was Hashem trying to fool Rav Gamliel, appease him? Does HaKadosh Baruch Hu go to these ends to make, in other words, show someone a vision that maybe stretches true emes? He said no. He said the significance of Rav Gamliel being shown the container. He says, here's what happens. He says, we can see the last embers from a fire. And it appears to us that they're going out, that it's gone. But then we see an ember or two that has a little bit of red on it. And if we push in something flammable, out comes a fire. He said Rav Gamliel was shown in history that they were students who, yes, were about to flicker out. But there's a time when being flickered can be reinstituted, can be brought to the level of the highest of flames. What they were saying is, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is of such, I guess, magnitude that a little bit that is encouraged to go further, right, can lead to greatness. Time and time again, we hear of stories of people who were great Talmidei Chachamim, and they'll tell you, you know, when I was younger, I was one of these embers about to go out. I was demoralized. I wasn't really into this. I decided there are probably better things to do. And somehow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a kindly Rebbe, or yeshiva, who talked to me. And he woke up something in my neshama. And the more I talked to him, something else happened. And that's the neshama of the Jew. And that's a neshama that can be inspired by Kedusha. The Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kedusha of the Yeshiva, the Kedusha of the Rebbe. The Jewish soul was put on this world in a way that it's never an ember totally put out. And that's what it is, that it can be revived and brought to a fantastic flame in Kiyum HaMitzvah. Okay, that's today's word. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.